There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1008, September 4th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say perfect 10 for Max in Monza. That's amore. Ting-a-ling-a-ling for him. Sainz Jr. plays my ting-a-ling. Wishing and hoping for 33 for lay host. And we're not talking Max's car number. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, senor.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Toto says Max's record means absolutely nothing. It's strictly for Wikipedia. And on top of that, he says that only LCH admits to making mistakes in Formula One. Now we have another watch, $325,000 watch stolen. Apparently, Sainz is held up by a bunch of Italianos. I'm sure it was pretty comedic, but he chased them and got his watch back. I was hoping all this would end with the Timex decoy watches, but nobody listens to me. Also, will Aston Martin bounce back? That was miserable for Fernando, struggling. He was admiring Williams, and he wants to see what he can do about emulating that for Singapore, where he wants to be machismo. And don't forget, we have an interview every week, and this week's interview, it's Martin Hines, back in the archives. This is 2006, Belgium. Fantastic Nasser Hamid interview, and he will give us small little details later on in the program. And just a reminder, folks, we need your contributions to keep this program alive and bubbling at the top. All we need is for you to go to the front page, click on the Support F1 Weekly tab, and you know you'll want to. Nas, what an incredible race. I thought it was awesome. And I thought Toto was way off. Let's hear just briefly what Damon Hill had to say.
And speaking about Verstappen's record, Toto Wolff said that it's not something that would be important to him, something for Wikipedia, and that no one reads it. Do you think that's just sour grapes?
It sounded a little bit like that, didn't it? It sounded a bit churlish and not very gracious. And unlike Toto, I have to say, I think usually he's very sporting, but I think he's hurting a bit now. I think that they know what it's like to be dominated. They didn't even get on the podium. So, you know, for Mercedes, they just signed Lewis Hamilton for another 2 years contract. He's paying an absolute fortune, I think, for Lewis. And they didn't really feature. I mean, he said, we cannot get happy with our position today. We can't be complacent. But they seem to be a bit stymied. They can't seem to work out what to do to close that gap. But then, who can? I mean, Ferrari did a great job in Monza.
Thank you, Damon. Nas, what do you think about all this?
Well, it was a fantastic Grand Prix we had on Sunday from the beginning to the end. And like you said, action continued even after the drivers reached their hotel. And Sainz Jr. was staying at Armani Hotel. So who can blame the thieves in the temple coming for his watch? But sir, Ferrari on pole position at Parco Monza, red skies at night, over 300,000 paisans through the gates at the Autodromo. What can possibly go wrong? Only one thing, man in the rearview mirror. Perfect 10 achieved by Max, which means, good evening, Mr. Vettel. Max and Red Bull's record-breaking run continues. Max, Mr. Rogers, I think, has now become a Mac Bulldog. If you come in his way, he will crush you sooner or later. And that's Orange Crush. And this one is not a refreshing taste for the competition. References available from Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, Jean and Joan, and who knows who. Now, not sure about you, Senor, but I had a strong inkling that once Max got ahead, it will be Arrivederci Roma and Maranello, and I was also pretty sure if he cannot get it done on the track, Red Bull will pull another rabbit out of the pit box. Were you expecting or hoping for a Monza 1988 or Barcelona 2016 moment to see a new face on top step of the podium, or perhaps a 42-year-old face?
I was hoping, Nasser. I mean, you know, we've got, I think, 8 more races to go, and to see Fernando win one more would be awesome. But I'm also rooting for Hülkenberg. We got to get this guy on the podium somehow. We need rain somewhere, and we've got to get this happening, and I'm going to start a new club about helping the Hulk. But no, I was, once Max, I mean, it took him a while, 15 laps, but once he did, it stuck, it was over. But I have to admit, even after that, this was a great race. The fight between the two Ferrari drivers was awesome. I mean, I'm really glad, and they even said, a race should be like this every weekend. So, great Grand Prix. It was fast. It was quick. It was crushing. There were records that were unbelievably shattered. I mean, we are in a fantastic era. I think everybody should just relax and enjoy it. And Max is doing just that. Things will change, folks. We've been there before. I don't want to hear the tears flowing.
Yes, this was absolutely a molto bene motor race, proving once again you don't need 50 passes to have a great race. And as you know, Mr. Rogers, this is my favorite race of the season at my all-time favorite track. And I'm so happy that I was there just a couple of months ago, even though it was a Formula 4 race. But Monza is heaven. You know, it doesn't matter Formula 4 or even if you just go for in-season testing, which I did many years ago. Anyway, Carlito fought the good fight till he got smoke in his eyes and put Tifosi's hearts on fire. But before we go deep into the ashes of the Grand Prix, are you ready for a quickie on Quali?
Absolutely. Quali was fun. It was stressful, but I mean, it was exciting, I have to admit. And I was happy for it. Made a perfect weekend. It was great.
Well, for the pole at the Temple of Speed, the difference was 0.013, giving Carlito his fourth pole position of his career. Mighty Max split the red cars very tight at the top. Russell was fourth and his teammate LCH, eighth. Row three was Perez and Albon in a Williams, Piastri seventh and his teammate Norris ninth. Now, all rise for judge, jury, and executioner of his own career, Hombre Carl Machismo, also known as Alonso. He is the only driver to reach Q3 for every race so far this season, so he deserves victory number 33 as soon as possible, hopefully this year. Muy impressive. He qualified 10th for the race, a race he had won in days of yore with McLaren in 2007, and I was at that race, Senor, and Ferrari in 2010. After Q1, Alonso was 10th, and this I note with much interest. His teammate, my boy Lollipop, was 20th. Why am I not surprised? Your due lira on red skies at night at Monza after qualifying, sir.
Yes, very interesting how Stroll is just slowly disappearing into the muck. I mean, he's not even talked about anymore. Nobody interviews him anymore like Martin Brundle used to. But it's sort of a sad state of affairs. I think he will be stepping aside for a new career with Papito's tennis courts. But the race was fantastic. The qualifying was fantastic. This whole weekend, you know, with the flyover, and Italy loves their flyover. They don't care. They want to keep it. But it was just grand. And with the Ferrari on pole, the people crying, Oh, mamma mia.
You know, this race is over in about 1 hour and 20 minutes, so I don't know why they have this need to go 2 hours in Monte Carlo and Singapore, but I don't make those decisions. But as far as the race is concerned, the prancing horses were running wild in the park, largest public park, I'm told, in Europe, that is Parco Monza. As exciting as it was to see a temporary regime change after Q3 and all the happy tifosis, I had a feeling Sunday will be a case of spilled spaghetti and Maranello marinara sauce will be replaced by Hollandaise sauce. And so it was. What else is new in Formula One? There is, and you can count on him not to disappoint. Yuki Tsunoda caused a delay after he stalled on the warm-up. Acme Towing had to be called as his car was stuck in gear and could not be pushed back to a safe area. And you know, as far as Yuki Tsunoda is concerned, he is quick, but he's erratic. And I think when Honda goes to Aston Martin, they should bring in, instead of him, Ayumu Iwasa, who is racing for them and doing a very good job in Formula 2. But we will see how that plays out. Once we got it going, it was bravo, bravo, Carlito. The start was fantastico. What could be better at Monza than Ferrari leading the Grand Prix on the opening lap? It was also one of my greatest wishes to ever see one day see a Ferrari win. And of course, I got to see that in 2006 when Schumi, in his final Grand Prix at Monza with Ferrari, took the honors. No surprise there. So, you know, this opening act was absolutely marvelous. And it was very interesting to see that even with DRS, Mighty Max at Monza was still having difficulty in passing Sainz Jr. You know, there's a lot of talk about this DRS thingy. Are you a fan of DRS?
No, of course not. I criticized it at the beginning. But every series nowadays has some sort of push to pass or some kind of aid to add excitement for the ones that need passing every millisecond. So it happens. You know, I was very impressed, but I think that Red Bull had an issue with their DRS. It wasn't quite up to the spec, and it only added another 7 kilometers an hour instead of 12 to 15. So it was interesting, and I think that made it more exciting. To make it too easy is silly.
See, and Sainz, you know, the one-hit wonder so far was doing a wonderful job in delighting the home crowd and keeping Max at bay. But it was like Haifong Bay from the Nam days, under constant heavy attack, and the fall was expected any lap. At the start, Russell was all over Leclerc, as David Hobbs would say, like white on rice, but could not pass the Ferrari. LCH was the only driver in top 10 on hard tires, rest were on mediums. Red Bull in a Ferrari sandwich. It was too close for comfort for anybody, but it was looking more and more that Charles Leclerc will not be putting Max under any major pressure. And I think that's where Max got away from them, as far as, and the victory got away from Ferrari. Had Charles passed him, or be right behind him and had Max use up his tires. But Max, no matter what you do, he's very good in tire management, even when he's going fast. But I thought maybe that was an opportunity for them. And then when Sainz Jr. started smoking his tires, it was obvious the devil's firestorm was coming, the raging Red Bull and the Mad Max in the cockpit. Carlito's 15 minutes of fame were over on lap 15. And before the team could say to Sainz Jr., "Andale, andale," Max was out of the DRS range. And that's all she wrote on the postcard from Parabolica, if not Paraguay. My favorite moment, Mr. Rogers, was on lap 6, when Max made his first attempt to grab the lead. He radioed to the team, "That was naughty." That was a very interesting comment, and it led me to a fast rewind on my Memorex memory bank. Some of us remember what happened at the same corner a couple of years ago. Excusez-moi, Monsieur Max. I wonder if that was naughty. But the Mighty Max was pumping fastest laps, no surprise again, and writing was on the wall, his teammate was closing in on George Russell. Lap 15 saw the screening of Smokey and the Bandit, and that was all the Red Bull driver needed to steal the race lead. Sainz Jr. put up a good fight to regain the top spot, but his paella dishes were done. A lap later, the other Red Bull of Sergio sailed past the top Mercedes of Captain Russell. Mr. LCH was quite anonymous in this race. I'm sure you must have noticed that, since he's your favorite driver.
I did notice it, but he noticed it too. So towards, you know, and this is a fast race, so towards the end of the race, he decided to mix it up and cause a little Scooby-Doo with Piastri. And, you know, he charged up to six. I thought he found some pace, he got a little more comfortable, and was looking pretty good there.
Okay, lap 20, Carlito in for new tires, Checo closing on Charles. Next lap, Max in the pits, also Leclerc. Top three remained the same after all the pit stops were done. Max on top, then two Ferraris ahead of the second Red Bull. Lap 24, McLaren boys fighting each other and trading paint. Lap 29, we have a Bonnie Tyler moment for the host.
It's a heartache. Nothing but a heartache.
As Lewis Hamilton passes Fernando Alonso, this movie is always worth watching, especially the 2007 release. Good. Lap 32, Leclerc off the podium as Perez passed him. Lap 41, LCH and Piastri go cockpit to cockpit, playing Let's Get Physical, which sends Piastri to the pit lane for a new front wing, and Lewis to the wrath of the stewards for a 5-second penalty. Oscar was classified 12th, while LCH, despite the penalty, kept his 6th place, behind his teammate George Russell, who was looking very racy this weekend. It is no surprise Toto is keeping same lineup for another 2 seasons. Albon was 7th. There was a lot of chatter on the interweb about the straight-line speed of the Williams, and Alex proved that in qualifying. On race day, reality set in, and he was the only Williams in the points, which has been the case so far this season. Sadly for American racing fans, his teammate from Boca Raton, FLA, Logan Sargeant, is the only driver who has raced in every Grand Prix this season so far and not scored a point. What's your take on him? Do you think they should keep him or send him to Club Med?
I think he should go to Club Med. Fernando is being kind and said that he can purchase a franchise for the Fernando beach chair or camping chair. So he's all set for the future. Let's face it, folks. There's nothing exciting coming out of Logan Sargeant. We would have seen it. We're not seeing that mystical Fernando-ism flowering to the top. He's a sweet, loving person, but I think as long as he doesn't crash like Latifi, we'll be okay. But in the end, and now, you know, Mick Schumacher wants this position, and now that the Williams is showing some speed, and there's a gap between Sargeant and Albon that's just pretty much not acceptable, I don't know. We'll see, but I think he'll finish the season for sure, but he's not here next year.
Well, you know, comparing a rookie to Fernando Alonso, Max, is very unfair in my opinion. I mean, that's just a bar is too high there. But, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said that compared to his teammate, the gap is not shrinking, or at least not shrinking as much as it should have. Because if you look at the same situation at McLaren, we have a very talented driver who's there for a few years, and another talent has come in as a rookie, Piastri, and he is pretty much matching. If not in qualifying, at least in the race, he can hustle and tussle with his teammate, Lando Norris. So, but I hope it's an American-owned team that they will keep him. And of course, you have to be kept if you're performing. I think they should give him a little bit more chance. Maybe give him another half a season. There is no improvement than bringing somebody else. So, but I have to say, apart from the sentimental reason, bringing Mick Schumacher into Formula One, I don't know what it will achieve. Yeah, I mean, Toto Wolff is the biggest proponent of that. Do you really want to see Mick Schumacher? I would rather see, if they're going to blow out Sargeant, I would rather see like a Theo Pourchaire or Jack Doohan, those who are in Formula 2, give them a chance, see if they can pull it off. So, anyway. So, Lando Norris, 8, only Papaya Carr in the points. Machismo, Fernando Alonso, 9th for Aston Martin. Your man is one of three drivers who have scored points in every race of the season so far. Alonso is 3rd in the championship with 170 points, and his teammate, Lance Stroll, is not far behind because he's in 9th, which is not bad, but he has only 47 points, and that is very, very bad because this guy is a Formula 3 champion and has been in Formula 1 racing for quite a few years now. The other two drivers to finish in the top 10 in every race are, no surprise here, Max. His worst finish is 2nd twice. He leads with 364 points ahead of teammate Perez by 145 points. Checo's total is 219 points. So basically, Max is closer to 400 points than Checo is to 300 points. And that's a huge, huge delta. Delta Dawn, I may like to say. 10th and final point went to Valtteri Bottas. His first point finish in the last 6 races. His Sauber Alfa Romeo was sporting Italian colors for just the home race. And Alfa Romeo, a brand I love and the logo I love, is based out of Milan, unlike Fiat, which is based in Turin. And there is a very nice Alfa Romeo museum where I have been. It's located in a town near Milan called Arese. And Mr. Rogers, if you look at the numbers, and these are available on Wikipedia, Mr. Wolf, Red Bull, they now have won 24 of the last 25 races, okay? And that is just very, very impressive. Whether you like them or not, there is that's another issue. And there is no end in sight. So let's take a look, listen to the race winner on his historic win talking to Lawrence Barreto of F1 TV.
Now that's 10 wins on the bounce of record. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, it's of course something I'm very happy with. Something that, you know, you don't even think about trying to achieve, because it's very unlikely, you know, that those kind of things happen. But yeah, very proud that it happened, and in general, of course, very proud of what the team has done. Also today again, I mean, the whole year so far has been pretty incredible. But also 1-2 here at Monza, I think, is pretty special.
And you know, like you said, Mercedes boss Wolf, Toto Wolf, says this is for Wikipedia, and according to him, nobody reads that. Well, this goes very well with those who say about his Prince Charming, 103 Grand Prix victories, 12 more than Michael Schumacher, what lucky wins. I guess it's yin and yang kind of stuff here. Carlos Sainz gave Ferrari their 2nd successive pole position at Monza. Last year it was his teammate Charles Leclerc. Carlito drove his heart out, defended bravely and cleanly against 3 tough and feisty drivers, Max, Checo and Leclerc. But survived to stay on the podium and was rewarded for his efforts by being voted driver of the year. And this is what he had to say about his busy day at the office, again courtesy of F1 TV.
It was a very tough, very long race for me, but I gave it absolutely everything. I think today was a day to try. Probably I tried even, I would say, too hard, no, with the Red Bulls. I was pushing a lot the tires to try and keep Max behind. Then obviously it was making me vulnerable at the end of stints with a lot of tire wear and being like this on tires, but I tried, and I think it was a day that we had to give it everything. I gave it everything. It nearly cost me a podium, but in the end I managed to hold on to it.
Mr. Rogers, your thoughts on efforts by Carlos Sainz, and then any final words on the race?
It was awesome. I thought he looked fantastic. I think Carlos Sainz is a great driver, and it was very impressive. It was clean, but it was hearty. The competitiveness, you could cut with a knife. It was beautiful. And to have that at Monza was a perfect Formula One weekend.
Yes, sir. And did you like the dice that was going on between Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz in the final few laps?
Absolutely. That was fantastic. I mean, Leclerc raced all the way to the checkered flag. You know, he wanted to be on that podium for the Tifosi. All drivers want to be loved by the Tifosi.
And you know what was interesting? Even Frederick Vasseur, the boss man at Ferrari, said that's what they want, you know, drivers fighting. And amazingly, all of them kept it very clean. That was, I think, the most impressive aspect of this race.
I agree. I mean, it could have been so easy to touch wheels, one flips over, and then it's tragedy instead of fabuloso.
Yeah, and there was quite a bit of body contact between the McLaren driver cars, and they were able to carry on. So this was very, very good from that point of view. And, oh, let's take a look here. One gentleman who was not there, Massa, no Mass at Monza. Well, you know, we are in IM times, so instead of sending Western Union man to the Casa of Massa in Sao Paulo, a senior member at FIA did a Jim Croce on him and placed a call to the ex-Ferrari driver, who was also close world champion, advising, stay home, don't call us, we'll call you. So Massa, who had already booked his flight, did not come to the Grand Prix. And I think if he had done his, probably paddock pass would not have worked. So smart move on his part. But Mr. Rogers, I wonder if the operator will keep the dime or donate it to Massa's legal fund. This, I think, is really piss poor on Massa's part. Maybe he has the same legal advisors as Alex Palou. What say you, amigo?
I'm not sure. And what's bizarre is, I mean, if he had done this in 2009, then I might be able to relate to it a little bit. But to have so much time pass, obviously he spoke to some person that tickled that bitterness that's been gnawing at him deep down inside. Because I think it's bizarre. I think he's going to regret it because it's going to be humiliating. And I hope it's not talked about too much. That's all.
Yes. Okay, now let me come to points to ponder about the Monza race. This was the 74th Italian Grand Prix since the championship started in 1950. And of those 74, 73 has taken place at Monza. The only exception was 1980 when it was at Imola. An Italian Grand Prix and the British Grand Prix are the only two races on the schedule that was also on the 1950 inaugural season. So very impressive. And your favorite, Lewis Hamilton and Michael Schumacher, they share the record of 5 wins each at Monza. And other Monza winners in the race included Verstappen, Fernando Alonso, Charles Leclerc, and Pierre Gasly. Anything that stands out for you about Monza, the history and all that kind of stuff?
The banking, I mean, I've been to Monza, I've walked it thoroughly. It's a fantastic track. Even the graffiti is interesting to read.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, not surprisingly, local team Ferrari has won at Monza 19 times since 1950, more than any other team. And what was interesting, that the first championship was won by Italian Giuseppe Farina, who was driving an Alfa Romeo, and he won the championship in the Italian Grand Prix. So he remains the only driver to have won the title on home soil. So that is very, very impressive. And on that, shall we take a break for Acqua Minerale?
That's a very good idea. I prefer maybe San Pellegrino. Stay tuned and we'll be back after these brief messages. Nasser, you did this interview back in 2006. I believe it was a karting championship in Belgium. In-depth interview with one of the most knowledgeable people in the industry, that would be Martin Hines.
Yes, sir. Martin Hines is the guru of karting, and he devoted his entire life to karting, and he has since, of course, passed away, unfortunately. And I was at Marienburg, I believe that's what the place is called, and it was at this event, Mr. Rogers. I go there with one of our F1 Weekly listeners, Mr. Mohammed Manzoor. Unfortunately, he has also passed away since then. And the first person I ran into was Jos Verstappen. And I asked him, what are you doing? And he says, oh, I'm here with my son. And Max was so young, I did not even look at him. But anyway, Mr. Manzoor introduced me to Martin Hines. Honestly, I did not even know who he was, but I was told that he is the guru of karting, and this guy, Terry Fullerton, raced for his team, and Terry Fullerton is the gentleman Ayrton Senna could not beat in karting. So we sat down in his camper, and we had a very good conversation, long conversation. So today we're going to do part one, and I hope our listeners enjoy this chat with the guru of karting, Mr. Martin Hines. Thank you.
Martin Hines, welcome to F1 Weekly. Please tell us something about your team and about yourself.
Okay, I had started in karting many long while ago, sort of like 43, 44 years ago. And over the years, I run a thing called the Zip Young Guns team, which brings on young drivers and we take them through to hopefully Formula One. Some of the drivers' names that you'll probably know from being in our Young Guns team with us was David Coulthard, Anthony Davidson, who's a test driver with Honda and maybe a driver for next year, Gary Pavitt, who's currently with McLaren as a test driver and we think maybe we'll partner Alonso next year, Lewis Hamilton, who's winning GP2, Mike Conway, who's winning the British GP Formula 3 Championships at the moment. My own son, in fact, races for Panos in the British GT Championships, which they're leading at the moment. So there's lots of young drivers that have all come through us. And the name is that it's not just about talent, it's about all the other things that you need around you. And you have to have your head right. Most importantly, the young drivers need to want to win more than anything else. And so it's been a very interesting life. Apart from that, we also manufacture things called supercars, which are the 250cc gearbox cars. Well, in fact, I pioneered in 1970, I built the first ever supercar. I took supercarting to Australia, South Africa, and of course America in 1976 when I raced in Daytona, and 78 when I won the World Endurance Championships at Daytona on the supercar. And of course now in America that's a big thing, supercarts, with a lot of the motorcycle boys that all race, especially because there's that great circuit you've got down in, just trying to think of it, the one with the corkscrew.
Laguna Seca.
Laguna Seca. You know, I raced at Laguna a couple of times in the supercar, fantastic venue. So I live a world of karting. One of the other things that we pioneered, of course, was indoor karting. I built the first ever indoor karts in 1982, and that's where it all started, in a little place in Clapham in London, and then it spread to a worldwide industry.
A little bit about more about yourself. How did you get involved in racing? I know racing is very popular in England. And was there any racing in your family, or was this something that just you caught on?
No, my family was always involved in speedway racing, which is the oval, the dirt cinders speedway. And I was heavily involved with that when I was a child. You know, from the time of 1 year old, every weekend I was at a speedway race somewhere, or every day, in fact, because it used to run all through the week. And my uncle used to race in speedway and was very well known in Europe. And in the World Championships, he finished twice runner-up. And my father used to run the race meetings. So I was brought into a world of speedway and motorcycle racing. And when I got to sort of 14, 15, I wanted to go to speedway racing. And my mother thought that was far too dangerous. At this time, it was about 1961, 62. My uncle had just retired from speedway, and he took up karting. But obviously, come to England, in about 1958, it came over with Art Ingalls, brought his first ever kart over to Mildenhall, to an RAF base. And I watched him at a couple of these little kart meetings, which were then big steel chassis with a lawnmower engine, and my mother thought that was fairly safe. So that was it. So we had, you have to understand that our business at that time was we used to make parts for speedway bikes. And also we used to make racing cycles, that we did the Tour de France and so on. So we had a manufacturing facility. So it was quite easy for us then to start manufacturing carts. And that's what we did. And I started racing carts, and then I went on to develop a supercart which did 150, 160 mile an hour, which was far more dangerous than any speedway bike. But that's the way life goes.
When you were growing up, who were your racing heroes?
Who were my racing heroes? I mean, probably in my early years, I suppose, I used to look at people like James Hunt, because he'd come from a fantastic background. He was a bit of a playboy. But as I matured, Ayrton Senna became a hero, and I'm fortunate to say a very good friend of mine, because when he started to race in Europe at 16, my own driver was then Terry Fullerton and Mike Wilson. And if you look through his life story, you'll see that all his karting was about Terry Fuller and Mike Wilson and Ayrton Senna. So I spent 3 or 4 years doing the European scene with them, and then I went on to, I was racing supercars, and I was fortunate enough to win a number of world championships, and whenever I seemed to win them, Ayrton would have won one. And so we just kept a lovely relationship. So he's probably my, out of all the Formula One drivers I've worked with and known, Senna is the one, and still is the one, that I think is the ultimate driver.
For a lot of people, myself included, you know, the world knows a lot about him as a race car driver. Can you share some personal experiences with him as a friend or as a rival?
One of the things I always remember with Senna, he was absolutely focused on what he was doing. Racing was his life. 24-hour days, 24-7, it was all about motor racing. But one of the things I always remember, one of the first times he ever raced at Silverstone, the British Grand Prix, I was there with him, and the morning before the practice, the first practice session, I walked round the circuit with him. And we walked up the pit straight, and the first corner is Copse. And as we come up to Copse, he walked off the track, over the curb, onto the grass, and then backwards onto the track again, then back onto the grass and onto the track. And I thought, what are you doing here? And I said, Ayrton, what are you doing? He said, I reckon that this is a good place to try and pass and get a couple of wheels up on the grass. And I just want to make sure how deep the recess is when you come off the track onto the grass, to make sure I'm not going to bottom the car out or damage the car, because I'm sure I'm going to probably have to use this part of the track, or not the track as it happens. And that was the first time he'd actually got to that corner and walked around and saw that corner, and that was the initial first thought, right, how can I make the best out of this corner? How can I, you know, can I slip off the track a bit and without damaging the underneath of the car? It's things like that. But I also remember that when we raced against him, Terry Fullerton, who was my lead driver at the time, and I believe was one of the best kart drivers I've ever seen, the first time, and I never heard Terry ever rate another driver. He was always the best, and quite rightly so, and that's the way he always saw himself. And the first time we raced international level with Ayrton, he came in, he said, this bloke is good. And I said, are you sure, Terry? He said, this bloke is really good. And, you know, that was, people can, you know, he just had that something extra. He had a big heart. If you weren't quick enough, he used to drive it harder, and that's all it was.
Was he a pretty good guy to be around when you were not racing?
Yeah, he was always, you could see that, you know, half his brain was always on the racing, but if you would just relax him, and he was just a lovely fella, really, you know. A lot of people thought that he was a bit off or sort of too much into his racing, but he wasn't. He was a nice, light-hearted, he had a good sense of humour, one wonderful person.
Very good to hear that, because he was my hero too. And I mean, I will never forget, people ask me, what's your favorite race? And you know, some of the best races that I remember him were races he did not win. Monaco 1984 in the Tolman of all the cars, in the rain. And my favorite Senna race, I believe it's the 91 German Grand Prix at Hockenheim, where he was second or third, and he just would not let Prost pass him, and yeah. Prost ended up hitting the cones and he was disqualified. Yeah. What is your favorite Ayrton Senna Formula One race?
I think my race, probably the favourite race, always goes back to the Donington race,
93.
Where, you know, I mean, that was just a fantastic, the first two laps were just unbelievable. And it's quite funny, because you were saying about, you know, his the race that you remember was one of the 84, the Monaco Grand. Well, the actual car that he used for the first four Grand Prix that year, mm-hmm. I have in my garage at home. And I bought that in probably about 1989, 1990. And I had the option of buying this car. And I bought it because it was Senna's very, very first Formula One car. It was the first car he ever raced in Formula One. And it was the first car that he actually got his first championship points on, where in Germany he finished with no nose cone on the front. And they thought they might disqualify him for being underweight, but they didn't, and he got his first ever points. So that particular race, I think he changed the car for that race, because the other car, the 83B, the car that I had, was made for the Pirelli tyres, and they were changing tyre company, but they couldn't get the tyres until Monaco, so they couldn't use the new car until Monaco.
Do you have the Monaco car?
Not the Monaco car, no. I have the car, the one he did the first four Grand Prix on that year.
Incredible. Tolman, Siegfriedo.
Yeah. And, number 19, Siegfriedo. And when you look at the car, you realise how the drivers were in those days. They were just unbelievable. Because the car is, it's so big and agricultural to Formula One today. And there was no driver help on it, no sort of traction control, was no nothing. And when you look at that car and you think, surely this couldn't be what they used to race at 170, 180 mile an hour. And it was fantastic.
Going back to go-kart racing, you said something that caught my attention, that, you know, it's not just the speed that makes a, you know, young driver turn into a good driver. What is it, let's say some kid comes to you who is extremely quick, okay, what is it you're looking for in him that you'll say, okay, you know, I think this guy can be turned into a professional race car driver, make it to Formula One?
Well, I think the first thing I look for is that he really wants it. And he's not doing it because his father wants him to do it or his family want him to do it. He's doing it because he wants to do it for him. Then the most important thing is that it has to be about winning. He has to want to win more than anything else. But also you have to realise, to be a good winner, first of all you have to be a good loser. And there'll come times when he won't win, but he's got to be able to handle the fact that he hasn't won, shake the hand of the person that has won, but then sit down and reflect and think, OK, where did I lose? Where was I not good enough? And it's a driver that's got that capability of sitting there and analysing what happened and use that positively for the next time. I've always said, if Ayrton Senna had woke up one morning and decided he wanted to be a tennis player, he would have been the best tennis player in the world. Because his mentality was, whatever he did, he wanted to be the best at.
Stay tuned for part two on podcast 1009. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Rogers, normally we go around the world and see what's happening in other forms of motorsports. But Monza is mi amore. The race was so exciting. So we're going to stay in Monza first and look at maiden wins at Monza. And then we will talk about other important issues in racing. So we shall start with Phil Hill. Man from Santa Monica, California, has a unique record in motor racing. He won his first and last race. In between, when he won his first Formula One Grand Prix at Monza in 1960 for the home team, it turned out to be the last victory in Formula One for a front-engine car. In 1961, Phil Hill became the first American world champion and to this day remains the only U.S.-born world champion, as Signor Andretti was born in Italy. Next we come to Jackie Stewart. In 1969, the Viscard won the Italian Grand Prix after a great battle with his Geneva neighbor Jochen Rindt. This is one of Jackie's greatest wins. His first victory, however, came in 1965 at the same track, and it was his only the 8th start in Formula One. And Mr. Rogers, I'm going to tell you, there is this company called LAT42, which I believe is now owned by Motorsport Network. In their archives, they have a picture taken from like a photo stand, cars entering and going out of Parabolica. It's a black and white picture with the sun shining on the track. It is probably one of the greatest racing photographs I have ever seen. Not in any order, but the drivers are Jim Clark, Graham Hill, Jackie Stewart, and Dan Gurney. And you can imagine those cars, how they look and turning. It's just a absolutely beautiful photograph. Okay, next we have Ludovico Scarfiotti, one-hit wonder, winning his home Grand Prix in 1966, driving a red Ferrari. He was related to the Agnelli family. 2 years later, 1968, Ludo lost his life in a German hill climb event, driving a Porsche. And unfortunately that year, after Jim Clark and Mike Spence, who was killed during a testing at Indianapolis, Scarfiotti became the third F1 driver to suffer a fatal accident during the 68 season. Now we come to Peter Gethin. This is, Remember once we were talking to Bob Barsha and asked him if he could go back in time and if he could go be at a one race, what will it be? For me, it will be the 1971 Monza Grand Prix. Peter Gethin, another one-hit wonder, this time from England. Gethin enjoyed his day of days in one of the greatest and closest finishes in Formula One history at pre-chicane Monza in 1971. He was driving a BRM and his margin of victory over Ronnie Peterson was 0.01. I think like the top four or five cars finished within less than a second. It's a very great photo if you look at it. And video available on YouTube and highly recommended by the Bradford and Formula One Exchange. Now we come to one of our favorites, Vettel, Sebastian Vettel. This 3M Monza Minardi Magic left a post-it note for the ages in the annals of Formula One history in 2008. Seb, then driving for the renamed Minardi team called Toro Rosso, at that time became the youngest Grand Prix winner with an incredible performance in qualifying and race in the rain. It was one of those magical wins like Donington 1993. You had to watch it to believe it. In the windmills of his mind, he knows he is no longer the youngest Grand Prix winner now is. And do I need to take that name? Apparently not. Pierre Gasly. Oh, Mr. Rogers, this is some serious frisson here for me. Pierre Gasly, first French Grand Prix winner since Olivier Panis in Monaco 1996. Gasly's maiden and so far only win in 2020 can only be appreciated by listening to commentary on the final lap by his people at Canal Plus. Here we go.
La ligne droite est plus courte que la première, il est un peu loin. DRS ouvert, l'accélération vers Ascari, ce sera pas avant Ascari, ça ne peut qu'être après la chicane d'Ascari, il faut encore tenir, allez Pierre, il faut tenir, jusque dans les derniers instants, il reste la parabolique tout au bout là-bas, elle est loin, elle est infiniment loin cette parabolique, écarte-toi, ne le laisse pas t'aspirer. Il se met à l'intérieur, il fait de la récupération d'énergie pour essayer de sortir de la parabolique. Elle est presque là, cette victoire. Accélère, accélère. Oui, il va aller la chercher. Ne lâche pas. La victoire de Pierre Gasly. Il l'a fait. Victoire de Pierre Gasly. Victoire d'AlphaTauri. La victoire française. 24 ans, 3 mois et 18 jours après Olivier Panis. La France, de nouveau victorieuse en Formule 1, il l'a fait Pierre Gasly, exceptionnel, victoire historique, Pierre Gasly, vainqueur du Grand Prix d'Italie. Ah, il y a de la déception, bien sûr, chez McLaren. Écoutez ces noms. Trintignant, Sever, Beltoise, Lafitte, Depailler, Jabouille, Arnoux, Pironi, Prost, Tambay, allez-y, Panis. Et aujourd'hui, Pierre Gasly, vainqueur d'un Grand Prix de Formule 1. Oui, monsieur, oui, madame.
Mr. Rogers, when the commentator Julien Fabreau started giving names of all the French Grand Prix drivers, especially those racing in and since the 70s, names like Sever, Beltoise, Lafitte, Depailler, Jabouille, Pironi, Arnoux, Tambay, that gave me and still does mega, mega chills. This moment and watching someone take his first win in the rain in Portugal 1985, these are moments in motor racing I will never, ever forget. Okay, sir, we now move on to two more years. Mercedes will keep both drivers for 2 more years. According to Lewis, his motivation is 8 championship, saying Mercedes has supported him since he was in karting, adding, and I quote, "It's been an honor to earn our way into the history book with this incredible team," end quote. I wish him and all the other drivers all the best, but I have a feeling before the major rule changes in 2026, we will have nothing but more wins and championships for Red Bull and Max Verstappen. LCH aspirations of more championships in the next 2 years remind me of lyrics from a Brian Ferry song. Let's check it out.
Taking all my dreams.
Okay, sir. Now, did you watch any of the Formula 2 or Formula... do they show Formula 2 on U.S. networks, ESPN?
No, sir.
Really? Not even ESPN?
Nothing. They used to back in the day. It would come on early before the F1 race around 3:30 in the morning. You can enjoy it with your cup of coffee or your Harvey Wallbanger. And it was awesome. But today we're in a modern world. And there's a lot of competition here in America. I mean, we've got the NFL. We've got tennis going on right now. So, yeah. As a matter of fact, when I recorded the Monza Grand Prix, the Italian Grand Prix, the Gran Premio d'Italia, half of the recording is that damn tennis match. So I was really pissed off. But that's how it is. You got to suffer in America.
Yeah, I remember they used to show live Formula 3000 races before GP2 even came into being. But like you said, there's too much competition. I think if they have a choice to show Formula 2 race or Jello wrestling from Pacoima, they'll probably go with the Pacoima live action. But anyway, we'll go back to Monza for the Formula 2 race. Toto Wolff's young Danish pup, Frederik Vesti, was the winner over French driver Victor Martin. Sunday's feature race, where the point system is same as Formula 1, was won by 18-year-old rookie from UK, Oliver Bearman. In terms of talent, he is more than okay and is member of Ferrari Driver Academy. And I think he's like 18 years old. Very, very impressive driver. Red Bull Japanese driver Yumu Iwasa moved up 13 places to finish second. French driver Theo Pourchaire was third and leads the championship by 25 points. Formula 3. In race 1 on Saturday, Argentina's Franco Colapinto won the battle over Gabriel Bortoleto. This 18-year-old boy, Bortoleto from Brazil, is the new Formula 3 champion, and he is managed by a company called A14 Management Company, and A is for Alonso. Which brings us to a hot serving of Campbell soup. I am sure by the time he gets to Phoenix, he will know how to win friends. And by the time he gets to Albuquerque, he will know how to piss off team owners. And by the time he makes it to Oklahoma, he will know how to piss off engine suppliers. Sorry, Mr. Rogers, but I thought, history may just repeat itself. You know, you like to say apple does not fall far from the tree, so you never know. Anyway, by the way, did you watch any of the MotoGP Grand Prix action?
No, sir. I know about the scary accident, people getting run over. That's why I'm not going to watch it.
Yes, this was the MotoGP Grand Prix of Catalonia from Barcelona. Huge and scary crash on the opening lap involving 5 riders. There were actually 2. And then Paco Bagnaia crashed on his own. The race had to be red flagged. When the race was over, the podium was occupied by 3 local hombres. Leading 1-2 for Aprilia was Alicia Espargo over Maverick Viñales. Third for Ducati was Jorge Martin. Bagnaia still leads the championship with 260 points over Jorge Martin in second with 210 points. And next race is this weekend in Italy at Misano Adriatico. I've never been to this circuit. One day I would like to go there. Okay. IndyCar racing from Portland. The City of Roses turned out to be a bed of roses for Alex Palou. He won the championship in style by dominating the race. Second championship for the Spanish driver in 4 years with Chip Ganassi Racing. I think the move may not be ethically very good, but the move not to go to Zak Brown McLaren team and stay here, I think is very good for his racing career. The final race of the season is this weekend at Laguna Seca in California. Is Mr. Rogers going there?
I am not, sir.
Okay, now we come to the American version of Formula 2, Indy Next, previously known as Indy Lights. The race winner from pole position was English rookie Louis Foster, whom we interviewed earlier this season, and I think the future is very bright for this kid on this side of the pond. Their final race is also at Laguna Seca, along with IndyCars this weekend. Danish driver Christian Rasmussen still leads the championship with 445 points. Second in the championship is Hunter McIlroy from New Zealand on 380 points. This was a good weekend for championship winning drives. Next, USF Pro 2000, we have a champion here also. Miles Rowe, supported by Penske Entertainment, becomes the first African-American to win a single-seater championship in this country. He achieved this by finishing third in race 2 on Saturday, and these races are available on YouTube. We interviewed him a couple of times earlier this year. His family is from Georgia, and he is studying in Brooklyn, New York. He loves pancakes, so I told him at Sebring that F1 Weekly will treat you and your familia to an all-you-can-eat pancakes at IHOP if he wins the championship. Next month, Mr. Rogers, as you know, I have Georgia on my mind and travel plans, as I would like to attend the Petit Le Mans for the first time. If Miles Rowe is in town, we can make this pancake celebration possible, and I'm planning on meeting his dad anyway. We've been having a nice conversation at the races. And Mr. Rogers, I don't know if you have been to an IHOP lately, but they have a perfect breakfast for you. Two pigs in a blanket. Eat and squeal like a pig. Have you ever tried that, sir?
No, sir, but next time I go to Appalachia, I'll give it a try.
You don't have to go to Appalachia. They're in California, too. And speaking of Georgia, I will also try to meet Bob Varsha because he is based in Atlanta area, and we recently had a little exchange of email, so we will see. You know, hopefully he's available. Okay, another series, I think this is like third step from IndyCars, is a series called USF 2000, and we have a champion, Simon Sykes from Athens, Georgia, finished third in race 1 on Friday to take the title. Very impressive, as earlier in the season it looked like Australian Lockie Hughes would win his second championship in 2 years. The race was won by a driver from New Zealand, Jacob Douglas. The Kiwi also won race 2 on Saturday, so this kid is doing good. And we're always happy when drivers stamp the authority. Now, Mr. Rogers, Faces Going Places. This is one of my favorite segments. About half an hour away from Tampa, where I am living, is a town called Gulfport, FLA. And this town has produced what I think would be the next big American star in single-seater racing. His name is Nikita Johnson. In Portland, he was doing double duty, racing in both the US Formula 2000 and the USF Pro 2000 series. He won the final race of the season in the bigger USF Pro 2000 series, so that is very, very impressive. He is 15 years old, and he won against drivers in their early 20s with a lot more experience. So I will try to reach out to him to arrange a meeting and interview possibility. Maybe we can invite him for breakfast at Cracker Barrel if there is no IHOP in Gulfport, Florida. And I was looking at his family's business. Apparently his father works here in Tampa, so Tampa is not L.A., so maybe I'll try to reach out to his dad and have him connect me with the super fast young talent. So this is very, very good. And the name is Nikita Johnson. Anything else, Mr. Rogers?
We've got Singapore coming. And maybe you think Felipe Massa might show up. Maybe in disguise.
Yeah, they won't be able to pick him out if he's there. Okay, now we come to famous last words. Today they come from Pretty Boy Floyd of Formula One. No, not George Russell, but the hombre who gave Jackie Stewart his only victory as a team owner. We are talking about Johnny Herbert. He is coming down on Ralf Schumacher saying, and I quote, "The one racer I didn't like the most because I found his arrogance on the track awful was Schumacher. Ralf, that is. He was obnoxious. He took me off the circuit once at 215 miles per hour at Monza, and his team had to push him to come back to apologize. From that point, I thought, you're horrible, selfish git." End quote. Any comments on that?
Interesting. Well, he was very nice to you, Nasser, but reading some of his comments, I'm starting to get the real Ralf Schumacher picture, and Johnny Herbert is a man who, he tells it like it is.
You know, when I was at the Toyota team in Cologne a few months ago, I was talking to this gentleman, and of course, Ralf's name came up, and he said he was very difficult to deal with, and I said, give me an example. He said one of the things he would do, he would go and hide in the loo bathroom to avoid media duties. So, but Ralf Schumacher was extremely polite to me, and so was Nigel Mansell. So I can only speak from my experience. Anyway, we finally come to Musical Mondiale. As we all know, there is world-famous La Scala in Milan, home to beautiful music. But there is another place near Milano which has a more powerful and sweet tune. And this place satisfies the soul with the best sound of music. Let's listen to this beautiful symphony from a 2010 performance at Parco Monza. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
53 giri per l'81esima edizione del Gran Premio d'Italia. La 14esima prova della Mondiale di Formula 1 con la Ferrari in pole position. Scatta Fernando Alonso e deve subito guardarsi dall'attacco di Jenson Button. Button lo infila Alonso e andiamo verso la prima variante con Alonso che è insidiato da Jenson Button all'esterno. Passa Button e dietro cerca anche Massa di infilarsi. Le due Ferrari rischiano il contatto. Massa è in anticipo su Fernando Alonso. Button ha preso la prima posizione e poi troviamo Alonso che tiene la posizione sull'attacco di Massa e dietro a tutti gli altri. Jenson Button ha avuto uno scatto eccezionale, così come il compagno di squadra Hamilton che va a insidiare il terzo posto di Massa. Si toccano la sospensione anteriore e destra, probabilmente danneggiata sulla McLaren. Vedremo. Button, Alonso, Massa, Hamilton, Rosberg, Kubica, Webber e purtroppo vediamo Hamilton con la sospensione. Riparte Fernando Alonso, vediamo Button sta in parabolica, sta effettuando la parabolica ora sul rettilineo. Fernando Alonso è in uscita dai box, vediamo se i meccanici hanno fatto il miracolo con Fernando Alonso che è davanti. Fernando Alonso in lotta con Jenson Button, siamo lì, siamo alla frenata della prima variante, è davanti Fernando Alonso, deve tenere la posizione a gomme fredde, deve tenere la posizione davanti a Jenson Button e sono stati strepitosi i meccanici della Ferrari, bravi, rapidi, precisi. Attenzione, ora Button cerca di prendere la scia a Fernando Alonso che guarda negli specchietti. Davanti c'è Yamamoto che si butta fuori, è la scelta migliore sicuramente con Fernando Alonso che è davanti a Jenson Button. È stato effettuato il doppiaggio di Yamamoto.
Una volta rientrata in pista, la F10 numero 8 è prima. Button azzarda un assalto, ma la seconda variante Alonso è già riuscito ad allungare. Le ultime tornate sono palpitanti, soprattutto quando, per evitare della rosa, Fernando finisce dritto in prima variante. Dunque, tutti col fiato sospeso fino al calare della bandiera a scacchi.
Webber 187, Hamilton 182, Alonso terzo a 166, Button 165, Vettel 163, questa è la classifica con Fernando Alonso che sta ormai affrontando le ultime curve. La Ferrari punta alla 18esima vittoria qui a Monza, un record assoluto, mai nessuna squadra ha vinto tante volte in uno stesso circuito ed è casa della Ferrari. Bandiere rosse già al vento e l'onda rossa che si muove, sicuramente andranno tutti sotto al podio a festeggiare Fernando Alonso, una vittoria del pilota ma della squadra per quanto hanno lavorato. Quindi bravo Stefano Domenicali a motivare i suoi uomini, anche il presidente Montezemolo ieri è venuto a incitare l'ambiente e la risposta c'è stata. Fernando Alonso va a zig zag per salutare la vittoria, bandiera a scacchi, vince Fernando Alonso il Gran Premio d'Italia, terzo successo in questa stagione per la Ferrari.
Alonso vince così il suo secondo Gran Premio d'Italia, precedendo Button ed il compagno Felipe Massa. Più attardati, Vettel e Webber, rispettivamente quarto e sesto. Lo spagnolo fa suo anche il giro veloce, a coronamento di un prestigioso hat-trick.
È un'emozione che se non la vivi, la tua vita come pilota non è completa.
La festa del podio vede il rettilineo del traguardo invaso dal popolo del cavallino. Cori, canti e bandiere mostrano un'onda rossa in delirio. Tutti avvertono che la rimonta è possibile e che la corona iridata di Alonso non è più un sogno lontano.